to a brand new episode of Look Forward. I'm your host, Jay. I'm here with my co-host, Brad.
We don't have any Mike Johnson porn-related apps that we have to talk about this week, right?
You never can tell. It's early yet. All right, guys. We have a lot to talk about this week. From sort of a wrap-up of election night from last week to Tim Scott has a girlfriend. Hilarious.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
she lives in Canada. She's not from around here, guys. So we got a little bit of everything. There's a lot. So let's get right into it. Look, Dems win big on election night. The only place Democrats did not win is conveniently in Mississippi, where they ran out of ballots.
Ran out of ballots specifically at polling places that tend to turn out for Democrats. Weird coincidence. We don't buy any conspiracies here on Look Forward, though. So
yeah.
That's all it will be is weird coincidence.
Look, it's just a coincidence that it's always the Democratic areas. It's always the heavily black populated areas. But let's talk about election fraud, the real election fraud, which was, you know, they found bamboo on a ballot or some bullshit, right? Like real election fraud.
Oh, don't worry. We're gonna get to some choice quotes from Donald Trump later on in the show. So
yikes. So yeah, Democrats kicked so much ass. Andy Beshear reelected as Democratic governor of the great state of Kentucky, defeating Daniel Cameron, the man who was literally handpicked by Mitch McConnell, who is the Republican.
And groomed by Mitch McConnell. Take whatever that connotation is you will.
Ugh, yuck. The Ohio pro-choice ballot measure won quite easily, I think by 13 points, if I'm not mistaken.
That vote, and maybe it's not so weird because an August special election is not going to have high turnout, but weirdly enough, the margin for abortion rights enshrining in the Constitution won by more than the August question of raising the threshold for constitutional amendments to 60%. I don't know how that's possible, but yeah, that's it did.
look, unfortunately, Tate Reeves, he did overcome, people voting to stay in as governor. Democrats did something that people did not think that was going to happen. Not only did they hang on to one chamber of the local state Congress legislature, excuse me. In Virginia, they took both houses or both chambers. So basically giving a big old F you to Glenn Youngkin, the governor.
Yeah, so much for Youngkin hopping into the presidential race, huh?
Yeah, that's a wrap. Yeah, you gotta try to save your neck in Virginia, my guy. So yeah, look, things were good. Things were really good. And look, let's get real. Here's the reason. It's the same reason we've been talking about for weeks, and anybody paying attention should have already known this. It's abortion. It is the number one issue, and it keeps coming up. Mm-hmm. Republicans, for lack of good logic, keep talking about it, and Democrats, for good measure, will not forget even if you don't talk about it. Because it is a thing that it will not let go, and they shouldn't let it go.
And you know what's funny, too, is the guy that ran against Tate Reeves in Mississippi for the governorship. Mm-hmm. I think his name was – I want to say it was like Brandon Presley, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. He lost by about 5 points, and he's actually an anti-choice Democrat. Like he's actually pro some abortion restrictions. Like, he's not out here and he lost. Meanwhile, like, if you put abortion on the ballot everywhere else, like Andy Beshear, again, a Democrat in Kentucky, barely won. I think he won by like half a point in his when he got elected in 2019, actually walked away. And he is no shrinking violet as a progressive. Like, he is very much vociferous, you know, pro-choice advocate, you know, very much for enshrining like abortion into Kentucky law. And Daniel Cameron realized, you know, too late, as it turns out, that his stance on abortion was so extreme. Like, he tried to pull that back in the closing weeks of the campaign and moderate his stance. as much as he could, but the voters were not fooled.
Hey, look, let that be a lesson. Don't run from this if you're a Democrat. Run towards it. This is a solid fucking issue. Look, I don't like to look at people losing their rights or gaining their more so losing their rights as a weapon politically, right? Like, because people suffer quite legitimately by not having access to abortion, true family planning, let's say, right? So I don't like to use it in that way, be like, yeah, we're fucking kicking their ass. Cause like people are potentially going to die because they don't have these rights. That being said, dude, we told you. Like, did you think women were gonna fucking forget this shit? Absolutely. You thought Democrats were gonna forget this? You thought liberals were gonna forget this? No. They're going to ram this particular issue, as Republicans love to say, down your throats over and over and over again until they get enough people on the Supreme Court to reverse it. That's a fact. Like it, and again, Republicans are just a dog running to catch a car, and they caught it and they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, we have screwed up so big. I mean, Rick Santorum got a bunch of shit this week because he said, you know, when you put sexy things on the ballot like abortion and marijuana, you know, what'd you think? Democrats, of course, are going to come out, you know? And look, I know people said, oh, he said sexy or whatever. He just means like intriguing, right? Like poor choice of words, I'll grant you. But what he means by that is you're putting something that will entice Democrats to come out and vote against you. But here's the problem, Rick. It doesn't matter if you mention it or not. It is a big thing. And your candidates, because they have to win the most extreme people in society, extreme far-right people in society, they have to talk about it. They have to say, I am pro-life. I am for this. I am anti-choice. I am, you know, standing against this, like, giant wave of evil progressivism, and I have to be the guy or woman to do that. I've got to stand up for babies. They have to say that, because if they don't, then Republicans will go, I don't trust you. Are you really as pro-life as you proclaim you are on your website? I need you to say that shit. And the second they say it, Democrats go, cool, that's the guy or woman I'm voting against. That's it.
Yep.
So you're fucked.
Well, and it's funny too, because you say, you know, that Republicans never seem to learn this lesson. And I think to one extent you're right, because like immediately in the aftermath of the Ohio vote, the Ohio legislature, which is Republican, is already sitting here openly talking about like how they're going to find ways to circumvent the will of the voters, essentially voting to enshrine abortion in the Ohio Constitution, which again, I feel like you can do that if you want. I don't know if it's going to end the way that you think it's going to. And again, maybe we're wrong, because, you know, we're going to talk about a story that on the flip side, the reason that they do keep doing this shit is because they are not always made, especially in ruby red areas, and Ohio kind of is that now at this point, to really pay any electoral consequences. In terms of it's a mixed bag, right? Like obviously in Virginia, which is probably a blue state that just leans purple, you know, yes, like you're going to pay for stuff like that. But I don't know in states like Ohio or in states like Louisiana, as we're going to discuss, if they have that same incentive structure in place, which kind of creates a bit of a tension in the Republican Party between folks that, you know, can say audacious bullshit. And folks that are on the front lines in competitive seats that are then hamstrung by a lot of these comments.
Yeah, they absolutely can't. Like, could you please shut the fuck up? I'm getting murdered over here politically. Look, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is your fault, Republicans. Like, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You wanted this. You thought that the best idea was to remove access to something 70%+ of Americans disagree with you on. Now you're going to pay for it. And people are not going to get tired of kicking the shit out of you over it. Like, they're not going to be like, not on this. Like, it's not an issue where people go, all right, I don't care. They're not, no. Because every day this becomes a deeper and deeper issue for people suffering. There will be stories between now and the election the presidential election, then we'll be talking about this. There's going to be, I hate to say it, but there's going to be a woman who dies, right? From either a back alley abortion or had to travel across state lines, or she gets an abortion and it's some like, she couldn't get it in her home state and it was some insane like situation. She's got a, she's carrying, she's forced to carry a child to term who they know is going to die or something like that. And it's going to be a story that women hear and men hear, and especially women, are going to go, what the fuck is wrong with the Republican Party? I'm not voting for those assholes. You don't have a year that will go by that will not happen. So you will always pay the price for that. And you should.
Well, and it's funny. And before we get into the Louisiana story, I did want to briefly talk about the fact that a lot of people, a lot of pundits, were kind of down on, basically talking about how, I don't know, if it's going to go well because Joe Biden's approval rating sucks and the economy's in the shitter and you see polling come out. Like we talked about that poll last week that the New York Times put out where it's like, RFK could beat Donald Trump and Joe Biden in certain swing states instead of the other thing. And this is why we tell you, like, you cannot sit there and just like dine out on polling. I would implore all of you listening, when you get a second, to basically listen to this week's episode of the Ezra Klein Show. He talks to Mike Podhorzer, who's a poll skeptic, essentially. He used to be the political director at the AFL-CIO, which is the biggest union in the country, basically. And this interview was great because Pod talks about the fact that, like, what polling doesn't show you is with the abortion, thing specifically, you might have a person who's like not politically engaged and all of a sudden like her two best friends are like freaking out about this shit that's going on, and they get her politically engaged and they get her, out to rallies or out to vote for, to fight against people that are trying to take away her rights. And polling just doesn't capture that. Like, it doesn't capture, where people are on election day. It's hard to project where you're going to be, a year from now, what you're going to think, because you don't know what's going to happen. Like, there's a million things that can happen between now and then. And polling, again, it's a snapshot in time. And it does also seem like is very specific right now. Like, when you see polling about Joe Biden, that's how people are just feeling about Joe Biden currently in a vacuum. Like, they're not thinking about it vis-a-vis how he compares to Donald Trump or how he compares to RFK Jr. or stuff like that. They're just being like, hey, what's your knee-jerk reaction on Joe Biden? But when you get to a voting booth in a year, and it becomes a choice between – it's an A-B choice between Joe Biden or Donald Trump that changes the calculus a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, we've talked about it. Neither one of us on this show think that not having a ceasefire is a good idea. We vehemently disagree with the president's stance on it, right? Do I think that in a year that is going to be the topic of choice that people are going to be talking about? Sadly, no. Like, and that doesn't mean that it's not important. It's incredibly important. People are dying, right? Like, and it is something that we could perhaps put our thumb on the scale and like have some level of influence on. But if you think Americans give a fuck about foreign policy, they don't.
We don't give a fuck about foreign policy that involves us.
Yeah,
much less foreign policy that doesn't directly involve us.
Right, exactly. And I know there's going to be a million fucking people that go, look at TikTok, look how many people are talking about. Yeah, now. And then in 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to be like, hey, here's the boob challenge on TikTok. Like, it doesn't resonate longer than it needs to, right? Like, for people's attention spans, right? And I'm not saying it's not important. It's incredibly important. And I wish people gave a fuck actually about foreign policy, because it does have a lot to do with like our day-to-day lives, right? And how we see the world and how we're affected and things like that. But they don't. They don't. They care about pocketbook issues, and a lot of times they care about one thing over anything else, as dumb as it is. I like that guy. I don't like that guy. Like, that's it. Would I hang out with one guy versus would I hang out with that other guy? That's it. Like, that's it. Look, I don't really want to hang out with Joe Biden, but I pick Joe Biden a million times over a million
over Donald Trump. Let's also call it like it is. Joe Biden, probably a pretty cool hang. Like, let's be real. Like, he's probably a good hang.
He's probably going to say some wildly inappropriate shit. He's kept it under wraps for a long time.
To your point, though, is that, again, like, yeah, Joe Biden's 82 and he's an old man and he's maybe probably too centrist for your liking. Donald Trump is literally, and I mean that maybe since this is the only time you're going to see me accurately compare Donald Trump to Abraham Lincoln, maybe since Lincoln, the most polarizing political figure in American history.
Yeah. And if I was writing a summary for this podcast to just be a dick, Brad positively compares Donald Trump to Abraham Lincoln.
Is saying that Donald Trump is incredibly polarizing a positive comparison to Abraham Lincoln?
Well, look, the New York Times pitch bot would say yes. Donald Trump, this generation's Abraham Lincoln. I'm sorry? Like, what are we talking about here?
And ironically, both men incredibly polarizing along the grounds of racism in many respects. So.
Yeah. Hope they end up the same. Anyway,
Donald Trump will never be caught dead in a theater or alive, for that matter. Quite frankly, yeah, you know,
one could wish. Anyway,
we could
not something to say before the hour, Mark. it's only six people watching this anyway. Yeah. So look, Dems win because Republicans did the mortal sin, right? Remember a number of years ago, maybe a decade ago, the mortal sin was saying that you were going to cut, the social safety net, right? That was a third rail of politics. Nah, man, abortion's a third rail. Like it is.
Yeah.
Because the second you fuck with it, yeah, you're done. Like they don't have a way out of this, which I find
it is. And it is crazy because, again, you know, to your point, and I'm going to reiterate it again, is that if they could just look through a historical lens of social issues in this country, you can never pull it back. You can never pull it back. Like, it just does not fucking work that way. We've seen it on so many topics, especially in the last several decades. You know, when you look at gay marriage, not a social issue, but you look at healthcare, like they tried in vain for, you know, almost a decade to repeal the ACA until they realized, holy shit, like we probably shouldn't touch that. That'd be a terrible fucking idea. Yeah. Like there's so much progress that's been made that you just like if you try to yank on the chain, like it's not gonna work. It's just not gonna fucking work. And I don't understand why they also can't see that with abortion. I guess in this case, again, because they're trying to appeal to the evangelical base that they have, and also the fact that I'm sure that those same evangelicals probably look at gay marriage as them taking like a major L, and this is kind of their way to get their bona fides back among it. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not one of them, so I can't think like them because I'm not a fucking idiot.
Yeah, well, facts. Right. But I mean, but here's the thing. Even if you're an evangelical, you're like a very politically motivated evangelical, you've got to see the writing on the wall that like, now all our guys are getting trounced. And all that means is that you are going to lose the House. You're going to lose the Senate, right? Like maybe not in this next go round or whatever, but like you're putting yourself in a position where you are eventually going to lose all major power. And then you're going to lose a situation that you definitely don't want, which is you're going to be behind the eight ball every presidential election forever, right? Because you're going to have a stance of I am pro-life, and the country's going to be like, no, like absolutely not, right? Once that happens, and once you are really behind the eight ball, especially in Congress and stuff like that, because you have been just trounced in every fucking election over and over and over again, and you just become a regional party, right? Once that happens, and Democrats have so much control of the vast majority of the country, they will eventually then stack the court. And it won't be 6-3. It's going to end up being like 8-1, dude, and then you're fucked. Because once that happens, they're going to just start dropping fucking bombs on your ass, and it's going to be a wrap. You think abortion is going to be bad? You think, like, having a pro-choice country is going to be bad? Guess what, motherfucker? Wait till you see what happens the next time they get power. Because it's not going to be, well, each state can do these, like, we eliminate all of the hospitals and it's only one clinic. No, dude, they're going to make sure they enshrine that shit so that you can't do that. They're going to be like, no, abortion on demand to any person in any fucking state. And no, you can't whittle it down to make it completely inconvenient for every woman in there, except for the two people who live across the street from this place. They're going to break mm-hmm. your ass over it. And guess what? When that happens and they have 7-2 or 8-1 fucking power in the Supreme Court, they're not just going to stop at abortion. They're going to go all the fucking way. And they should. They should ram it down your fucking throats. And guess what? You're going to look back and go, what was the thing that caused all of this? The thing that caused it is exactly this moment. When you took abortion and you threw it back to the states and you guys went fucking hog wild on that shit and you pissed a bunch of young people off. Because guess what? The people you're pissing off aren't 75. They're 20, dude. Like they have an entire fucking lifetime of growing up and fighting against you. And raising kids to fight against you. So you're dealing with probably 2 or 3 generations of people who want to see you politically destroyed. Best of luck. Best of luck. So, look, I love it. I'm a huge fucking fan. Like, I love it. But, like, again, I don't mean to make light of people suffering because of this decision that Republicans made, because that is a very serious thing. But they're going to pay, and they're going to pay politically in an extreme way that they would have probably never have paid if they had just left it alone, right? Because you could always use it as a like a wedge issue. Oh, we're pro-life. You get the fucking right-wingers jazzed up. We're going to get abortion. We're going to get it. And the Democrats go, not on your fucking life. And then some Democrats come out. But now that it was
an effective wedge issue for them too, because they never actually had to – yeah. deliver on anything, because they could yell about it and then be like, oh, you know, the Supreme Court, like, what are you gonna do? Like, and then, you know, like you said, they kept that push and they eventually got they got what they thought they wanted. So
now you know, even, you know, I only talked about one part of that Santorum clip. The other part of that Santorum clip, which is the most provocative in my opinion, was that's what he says, that's why pure democracies are not a way to govern a country.
Yeah, isn't it weird?
Quiet
isn't
it part loud?
I'm gonna say, isn't it weird how Republicans are always seem to be the ones that like, oh, like no, we shouldn't just let the people decide what the fuck to do. They're idiots.
Yeah, what are you out of your fucking mind? They're gonna vote against us. Jesus Christ. Yeah, but he told you exactly what the Republican Party really thinks. They don't want you to vote on those things. And look.
Oh, we know. I mean, we've seen the gerrymandering. Yeah, right, right. We've seen the results.
Look, and I'm gonna do something I wouldn't normally do. I'm gonna give a slight little inkling of a pass to Rick Santorum a little bit, because I agree with him a little bit. And here's where I agree. When you have a pure democracy, the only time it's really not a good idea is when you are having people vote on the human rights of others. That's not a good idea. Because there was a time in this country, if you put it up to a vote and they were like, should we have slavery? White people would have been like, yeah. Like, that's not a good thing, right? So when you're talking about people's human rights and like what they are capable of doing, like their general rights, that is not good. But when you're talking like about their actual humanity, but when you're talking about their rights as like being able to do certain things and to, you know, have control over their, you know, whether they get drugs or like control over their personal bodies and stuff like that, that should go up to a vote. People should be able to say, yeah, look, this is my personal body, not the choice of someone else. And I know what Republicans would say, well, that baby, no. That baby belongs to that woman. That is a part of her body. She gets to make that choice. It is not, they are not two different individuals, because that baby ain't popping out and fucking walking around like without a long gestation, right? So it's, though in that regard, he's correct, right? Which is not what he meant, obviously. He meant, don't let these motherfuckers choose anything that you don't agree with. That's what he meant, right? But when it comes to like human rights and things like that, that kind of stuff shouldn't be put up for a vote, because like if you're in a situation where people want to take other human beings' rights away, that's probably not a great idea. So, and again, it's easy to take the abortion issue and say, well, that's the opposite of what you're saying, but it's actually not. because you are, that is a right that a person is defending of themselves, right? Like that is a, that's a very different thing than voting to say, hey, can we take someone's rights away? That's not the same thing. So, yeah, but other than that, no, fuck Rick Santorum forever. I can't believe he's still on. He's now made it down to the lower rung of news. He's on,
yeah, I'm about to say he's on. He, that was on Newsmax that he said that. So he's you know, he's not moving up in the world. Let's say
this push down, down, down to the underworld would be fine. Thank you.
Hey, Rick Santorum won Iowa. Don't forget.
Yeah, look, it was, it almost happened for him.
It
almost happened.
It did.
Until it didn't. Oh my God. Next up, Georgia judge schedules emergency hearing in Trump RICO case following video leaks. So apparently, I don't know if you
– I didn't hear about this.
No? So
no.
The Georgia judge presiding over the election racketeering case
oh, these leaks. I didn't realize these were the leaks they were talking about.
Yeah. So there was leaks of the video proffer agreements – for some of, or plea agreements, as they could be used, or as they could be called, for some of the co-defendants, right? You know, I think Sidney Powell and somebody else, there was, Ellis was leaked. There was a couple people who were leaked, right? And there's,
it was Powell, it was Ellis, it was Scott Hall. It says Kenneth, Chesbrough's proffer agreement got leaked as well. I haven't seen his, but I've seen bits and pieces of the other three.
Right. So basically, the prosecution is like, listen, you can't have this shit out there. And I mean, it's obvious who leaked it, right? Mm. This is not fucking rocket science. But they're like, look, you can't – Fonnie Willis and the prosecution was like, listen, you can't put this shit out there because it's used as an intimidation factor, right? People will harass these people and then try to get them to turn and you know, kind of renege on what they said and everything else because they're being harassed and harangued and, you know, threatened and all this other stuff. The judge was like, oh, no, we're having an emergency hearing on this shit. Probably tomorrow, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's when they said tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah. My guess is you're not going to be able to do this. And look, Trump came out and was like, no. Trump and his team were like, no, we should be able to do this. Yeah, because they want to be able to harass and harangue these people. Or at least
dare you not let us engage in witness intimidation, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, what kind of judge are you? Like, get out of here. Like, so, quote, the release of these confidential video recordings is clearly intended to intimidate witnesses in this case, subjecting them to harassment and threats prior to trial. Constitutes indirect communication about the facts of the case with co-defendants and witnesses and obstructs the administration of justice in violation of the conditions of release imposed on each defendant. Yeah, I mean, I think this is pretty obvious. You don't want to have this shit out there. People will use this as a method of trying to scare the shit out of these guys. And look, that's a real fear because that's kind of what they do. So, yeah, no thanks. So hopefully this gets handled, and maybe they kind of lay the law down a bit on this.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, you want to talk about Donald Trump, a.k.a. Lincoln 2.0, according to you.
Do I ever? So Trump had a rally in New Hampshire. Over this past weekend, and he made some news because he had some interesting things to say. Now, the first part of his stump speech, which I think he talked for like 2 hours. I don't, you know, for someone that's like not energetic at all, very low energy, sleepy Donald Trump, it is amazing that he can kind of ramble on many times a week for like multiple hours at a time. But I guess that is one thing he's really good at. Yeah. He talked about, again, like he's going to, like, if he becomes president again, there'll be mass deportation 10 million? Like basically all undocumented immigrants is planned, because that won't have any effect on the U.S. economy whatsoever.
Probably not.
In any way, shape, or form. He also, and again, like, I feel like this has been undercovered. Like, this whole speech has been a little undercovered. Talked about bringing back, like, camps. Where they'll round up all of the undocumented immigrants and put them in camps, which
cool.
Yeah, like that's not strange at all. Also, Jay, he'll do the same to his political opponents and people that speak out against him. So you and I had better watch out if Donald Trump becomes president again, as vociferous opposition to his candidacy. They also talked about how
takes on Thugs of News. Nobody, get out of here.
Nope. Also talk about how like they, you know, they'd be cool to, you know, roll out the Insurrection Act if he became president to clamp down on protests, like just roll it out immediately. But then he got to the prepared marks of his speech, and you could tell it was prepared because the like the cadence and the freewheeling, you kind of slowed down a little bit. And again, when I heard about this, like it was, I knew it was a Stephen Miller special, right?
Right.
And Trump talked about how basically like all the, you know, all the Marxists and communists and fascists, because we're fascists, Jay. Like they're not the fascists, we're the fascists.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will be snuffed out and basically compared his opponents to vermin was the exact terminology that he used. And that caught a lot of people's attention because quite famously, many fascists throughout history, and especially Adolf Hitler, would use the exact same terminology when speaking about their opponents and their opposition.
Look, I got to tell you, that's not cool. I saw a headline and I agree with it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think Donald Trump is saying these things on purpose. I think he is well aware. Whether he believes it, I think he probably does believe it. But I think he's saying it on purpose. I think he is saying these things to get a rise out of people. I think he wants you to say, oh, he's like Hitler. And then his constituents will say, hey, you just say everybody's like Hitler you don't agree with. Mm-hmm. Thus, you know, sort of, you know, knocking any sort of weight.
Meaning.
Like weight out of what you're saying. I think he's well aware of it. And look, I don't think that he necessarily knows that like Hitler said vermin, but I guarantee you his speechwriter does. Right?
Oh, if it's Stephen Miller, he 100% knows. I'm sure that dude fucking studied Mein Kampf like a fucking
he's like, this is
forming document.
He's like, this is the audio book of the year for me. So
it is, but it just also goes to something we talk about on the show a lot, and this is a similar argument that Posse of Erica made on their show this week. Democrats are held to such a higher standard than everybody else.
I disagree with that. They're held to a standard.
Oh yeah. Republicans aren't even held to a standard. Yeah. Right.
Republicans aren't even held to one.
Now the timing was different, obviously in comparison to the proximity to the election. But again, like take yourself back in time to September of 2016. And remember when Hillary Clinton called half of Donald Trump supporters a basket of deplorables. Something that is not nearly as inflammatory as calling your political opponents vermin and talking about how you're going to round up immigrants and put them in concentration camps and that you're going to invoke the Insurrection Act. Not nearly as inflammatory. And you would think that all the fucking norms and laws of political civility had fucking just gone out the window at that point. You would think that Hillary Clinton said something that was irredeemable to talk. How dare she talk about middle Americans that way? The great heartbeat of America.
More like the great unwashed masses. It's fine.
morons.
The common clay of the New West.
Yeah.
So like, here's the problem. She was right. Like, that's the difference. Like, she actually was correct. And if anything, she might have lowballed it.
Right? Lowballed like, the estimate? Yeah.
Oh, Hillary, once again, your math, not very good. It's like 78%. Even then, I may be lowballing it. So, like, yeah, it's – Democrats are held to an impossible standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Republicans are always treated like kids. Democrats are treated like the adults in the room, and Republicans are allowed to come in, some of them quite literally, throw their own shit around in the people's house, right? Like, They are treated as if they are not capable adults, and they, whatever they say, they have to write some bullshit argument to hand wave half of it away and stuff like that. They have to, because the reality is, if you call it like balls and strikes right down the middle, it looks unfair. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, well, Democrats have this plan and Republicans don't have any plan. So what do you say? You have to then slant the reporting and go, well, Democrats' plan doesn't work for XYZ, blah, 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 ABC reasons. You got to like give them 12 different reasons why it's flawed, because you have to make up ground for the fact that the other guys don't have a plan.
We saw this in 2020, by the way, quite literally saw this in 2020 when, again, for those who don't remember, the Republican Party platform, the official Republican Party platform was, I don't know, whatever Donald Trump wants to do. Yeah. Was literally the fucking Republican Party platform.
Yeah. And look, if you think Brad's like exaggerating, he's not. He's maybe using slightly different words, but it was whatever Donald Trump wants to do. Like, that's what it was. Like, but look, I can go back even further. I can go back to 2010 when Democrats were like, hey, we're running, and, you know, this is the off-year election after Obama's elected, right? They're like, hey, we're like keeping the Obama train going. Like, we're working at all these things that are problems. We're trying to get the economy back going. Like, we're doing it. You know, like we're handing out TARP money. We're trying to save America. Republicans were like, these guys suck, and if you elect us, we have a plan to fix it. And the media was like, cool, what's your plan? And Republicans pulled a fucking Joe Biden or Peter Ducey and was like, I can't tell you. What? And they all got in line in 2010. And that was literally their strategy for the midterm election, was to go, we have a plan, but we're not going to tell you. And the media said, that's a genius plan. Yeah. And guess what?
And by the way, that did.
And then they didn't have a fucking plan. They didn't have
that didn't stop for 8 years. I mean, again, we got up all the way until 2018 when John McCain gave the thumbs down to be like, hey, we're going to repeal Obamacare and we're going to replace it with something even better. Well, how's it going to be better? We can't tell you. We got to repeal Obamacare first. Like that's step one. Step one is we got to repeal Obamacare. Then you can find out about our awesome healthcare plan. And then some people were like, yeah, I don't think you have a plan. They're like, oh, no, trust us. We definitely have a plan, but we got to get rid of Obamacare before we can institute the plan. Yeah. And then it turns out, shockingly, to the surprise of literally nobody, they had no plan. They just want to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah. For 4 years, Donald Trump was like, oh, well, it's a great plan. It's a beautiful plan. A beautiful plan? Okay, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Right? It's a great plan. It's a beautiful plan. Cool. When's it coming? 2 weeks. It was always 2 weeks. there were two things that happened in the Donald Trump presidency for 4 years over and over and over again. Infrastructure week was like every week.
Mm-hmm.
Or every other week, and the off weeks was like, here comes the healthcare plan. Right? Like, that's all it was. And nothing ever got done. There was no real infrastructure week. That was just a misnomer for somebody's getting arrested or fired. That's all it became.
Another high level cabinet or administration official was leaving.
Yeah. Infrastructure week. Oh, so who's going now? The guy who beats his wife, the Burger King guy, like, who was
it? Yeah, the guy that spent fucking $90,000 on doors for his office. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that guy's out of here. So, yeah, going full Adolf. I mean, again, you should call it out. You shouldn't let this shit rock. You really, really shouldn't. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to go pay some bills, and then we'll be right back. Okay. Next up, this is an absolute great story. Do you want to take this story? Because I know that you do.
I'd love to. So for the past several months, especially thanks to Politico's dogged reporting, we found out
ProPublica.
Oh, ProPublica. Sorry, yeah. Don't give Politico fucking credit for anything. Yeah, don't give them. Just to use a term that Micah would use, just googobs of corruption on the Republican side of the Supreme Court. We got, fucking Clarence Thomas's BFF Harlan Crow is buying his mom's house and fucking giving him RVs and shit like that. And, Sam Alito's taking, fishing trips on private jets to fucking Alaska. And, you know, no one's really sure, like, how, you know, fucking Brett Kavanaugh paid off all his, you know, $200,000 of debt and has all, like, free Nationals tickets. And there's just, like, a shitload of corruption on the Republican side of the Supreme Court. And one of the reasons why people have been concerned is because the Supreme Court code of ethics, like they're not subject to the same ethical rules that other federal judges are subject to. There's no formal bylaws that the Supreme Court has to adhere to.
But Brad, they've always held to them. They just didn't say it.
That's what they're saying here. Like it's always been, hey, just trust us. That level of non-scrutiny has not been passing the muster as of late. There's been a big demand not only from the people, but also from Congress for the Supreme Court to get their shit together, or we'll get it together for you kind of thing. So to kind of cut this off at the pass, to head it off at the pass, the Supreme Court released a 15-page document on Monday that basically outlines a new code of conduct for Supreme Court justices. Weirdly enough, somehow this 15-page document does not actually really say anything at all. It's just a bunch of the same vagaries that they have been kind of touting themselves. And it's like, hey, like, you know, like, definitely Supreme Court justices should recuse themselves when it's necessary. But also, since there's only 9 of them, like, there might be times where they shouldn't recuse themselves, even though they definitely should recuse themselves, because, again, there's only 9 justices, so sometimes they might have to sit in a case that might have, like, a borderline, you know, thing. Essentially, they did not want to throw their current justices under the bus for past bad behavior. And so they thought that releasing this would serve as like a band-aid to all the criticism. Spoiler, it has not. Not even a little bit.
Look, one thing I will say about like the ProPublica reporting has been really, really great. You know what's also really great? The level of pettiness in this Vox article is unbelievable. Like, it is written by, I don't know, like,
Ian Millhiser, who he and Dahlia Lithwick, who writes for Slate, are probably the pettiest Supreme Court coverers.
Dude, this entire article is written in the most sassy fucking tone of like, oh, is it done? Oh, did you write this report? Cool. Did you write it when you were doing all this dirty shit, hanging out with Harlan Crow? Like, they just list over and over again all the horrible things violating the ethics code.
Here's my favorite line from this article, by the way, from Ian Millhiser. The Supreme Court's new ethics code, in other words, is the equivalent of a biography of John Wilkes Booth that focuses entirely on his acting career without ever mentioning the fact that he murdered President Abraham Lincoln.
Yo, I mean, again, the level of pettiness. Like, I'm here for it. No, it's a joke. Well, it's long been a joke.
Yeah, the thing that was immediately pointed out upon the release of this was that they talk about, like, oh, here's our ethics that we follow. Nowhere in there, though, is any sort of, like, enforcement mechanism. Like, if someone violates this code that you've laid out, what's the punishment or what's the procedure for holding them to account? You'll be shocked to learn, listener, that there actually fucking is none, because the Supreme Court, again, thinks that they are above the concerns of us mere mortals. And the 9 folks in robes have, you know, they should just get to rule on us without us having the same sort of feedback to them. My argument to them has always been the fact that, again, like, we have a system that literally is built on checks and balances. Like the way the system is structured is for the other 2 branches of the federal government to check on each other branch to make sure that they're not doing some foul shit. There's absolutely no reason at all that Congress could not pass a law saying that they will basically, you know, keep an eye on the fucking Supreme Court and make sure that they're holding true to their ethical obligations, which should involve recusing yourself from cases where you have fucking a personal relationship with one or with a company or one of the fucking, you know, people that's arguing before you. Like, it's insane that fucking Samuel Alito, again, went on a fucking private fishing trip with a organization that then had business before the court on six subsequent occasions, all of which he ruled on, all of which he ruled in their favor on, and was never once thought, you know, maybe I should sit this one out because it doesn't look good.
No, I mean, there was one a number of years ago, I believe, like Clarence Thomas didn't recuse himself, and it was for, I can't remember the name of the company, but like he had done work before he became a Supreme Court justice. He had done like some level of work for that company. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you think you should recuse yourself? No.
No, I could be impartial.
I don't work for them. Like,
even though they literally fucking paid my bills,
right,
for a number of years.
Come on, man. Like, even if he hated that job and he hated the CEO of that job, that's not fair either. Like, you shouldn't be sitting on the bench ruling possibly against them, right? So, it's
not. And again, I know we're beating up on the Republican Supreme Court justices, but in all of the shit that's come out, it has been a uniquely Republican problem. It sure seems from a corruption standpoint, from an ethics standpoint. I'm sure ProPublica has looked for dirt on Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson. I'm sure that they're turning over rocks. They're just not a whole lot to turn. And by the way, Ketanji Brown Jackson last term recused herself from a case that Harvard was involved in because she sits on their board of admissions. That's what you're supposed to fucking do.
That's what you're supposed to do. Right. And look, here's the thing. You don't have – like the mechanism for recusal should not be self-governing. I'm sorry. It shouldn't be. There should be a board or something that goes, nah, man, you work for these guys. Get the fuck out of here. Beat it. Like you're off this fucking case. Like I would even be fine with it being like the lower appeals court to look up and be like, no, this is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can be a 360 check, right? Like, you know, they have those in businesses, right? Like a 360 review, like you review your employees, you give yourself a bit of a review, your employees review you. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like have the appeals court come in and like, so that they're not necessarily politically motivated or hopefully, really not. And they're like, hey, Clarence Thomas, you worked for these guys before. What the fuck? Beat it. Hey, man, you know, if they had actual disclosures and they were like real, hey, you disclosed that you went on a fucking yacht with Harlan Crow. No. So you can't be on this case.
Or here's the other thing you can do. Like the Supreme Court doesn't hear a lot of cases compared to most federal benches. And you know what their docket's going to be months in advance. You could easily have the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, because the Senate's the one who's generally involved with confirming the Supreme Court justices, you could have the Judiciary Committee in the Senate review their caseload and have their staff, because they have fucking staff that works for them that does this shit, review for any possible conflicts of interest. And they could be the ones to be like, hey, guess what, Clarence Thomas, like because of this, you're not sitting on this case. It's going to be an eight person battle.
Look, I fundamentally agree with you, but the only problem with that is that means the recusals become political, right? Because depending on who's running the Judiciary Committee, who has the more seats in Congress and stuff like that, it doesn't become a thing that you are being recused because you should be. You're being recused because your party is, you know, saving you or pushing you out. Mm-hmm. Or another party is pushing you out. That's my only issue with that. But I agree. There needs to be some body that comes in and goes, this is unacceptable. You gotta recuse yourself.
I don't know how you're gonna find a body that's nonpartisan that can do that. Maybe you can have a panel. Actually, you know what? How about this? How about you have a panel, and that panel is either it's probably gonna be bipartisan, but you can say nonpartisan. But how about that panel's made up of retired federal judges, and basically that panel can be picked by shit. You can even have the fucking Supreme Court pick it. I don't care. And you can have that panel picked by the Supreme Court, and they review for any potential conflicts of interest.
Right. And by the way, in the way that you do this to try to keep the politics out of it, you put, let's say of the Supreme Court justices, you just give them numbers, right? It's a randomized number every single time you come up for one of these. You don't know who the Supreme Court justice is, and you just go, this person, you know, person one, and, you know, and you could use computers or whatever, I don't know, like data to just scan a bunch of information of like, you know, they're, you know, they put up, hey, these are trips I took and these are people I worked for, whatever. All of that information is there. You have it scanned and just go, okay, this, you know, Justice One does have a conflict. Right. Well,
that would require the justices to properly disclose their.
Of course, right? I mean, we run into a bunch of things, right? But what I'm saying is, if you have a board, right? The problem is, if you have a board, and let's even say it's a newly elected board for this job only, if you have that board, and someone's like, I don't fuck with Republicans, or I don't like Clarence Thomas. Then maybe they are more overly scrutinizing to get a recusal. Like, oh, well, Clarence Thomas went to a Maggie Moo's one time, so he can't talk about this case about ice cream, right? Like, you don't want that, right? And you don't want the opposite of that, right? So, like, a Democrat, you know, appointed judge getting, like, pushed off of a case that they absolutely should be on for some, like, wackadoo issue. So, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the answer is. I know that there needs to be a mechanism of action for these guys, and there isn't one right now. And that really is the point.
Yes.
There's no mechanism to going, hey, man, like, what you're doing is corrupt as fuck. Like, this is unacceptable. So, fun times. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, Joe Manchin will not seek re-election in 2024. Brad, you have long stated that replacing Joe Manchin with a Democrat would be easy. So
I've long stated that.
You've long said it.
Yes, as part of the DSA, I've said all you need to do is just find the right candidate to sit there in West Virginia, a progressive bastion, the land of socialists, which is the state motto of West Virginia. You might not have known. Yeah, it's all you got to do. You just got to find the right person to deliver that message to West Virginians, and we'll basically have our own AOC in West Virginia. It'll be no problem.
Yeah, like, look, I know that, you know, it was very, very, very easy for very liberal Democrats to be like, we can just replace Joe Manchin with somebody who really speaks to Virginians. Now's your chance.
West Virginians.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah,
now's your chance. Find this magical candidate who has a fucking snowball's chance in hell in winning this seat in West Virginia.
They have tried this. You can go see it because there was literally a documentary made where one of the persons that someone primaried Joe Manchin that was basically like a handpicked DSA, candidate for the Democrats and got the shit kicked out of her in a Democratic primary by Joe Manchin.
Like, you're not going to win, right? And this is going to a Republican. It is what it fucking is, right?
It makes an already very difficult Senate map for Democrats just a little bit that much more difficult. And the point was made, like, really where this actually benefits Republicans is it takes a race that they would have had to spend money in to compete for, and it makes it so that they can reallocate that money in other races, because they don't need to spend a lot now without Joe Manchin being there to get the fucking seat.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the other here's the silver lining of this. We're getting Manchin and Sinema the fuck out of there. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? We're getting them the fuck out of here. So I'm cool with that. But yeah, we're definitely losing the seat to a Republican. Like, look, unless you find another magical kind of blue dog Democrat that you can run in West Virginia, we are going to lose this seat.
Yeah, but the dude running for the Republicans is going to be fucking Jim Justice, who is literally coming off of two terms as governor. So again, he won two statewide elections. Oh, pretty sure it's not going to be too hard to win another one for him.
And he's pretty, I mean, you know, for all of West Virginia's nonsense, he's pretty goddamn popular. So
yeah. And again, could be worse. He's not a fucking Trump asshole. So, like, you know, you could get a worse Republican in there for sure. So, yeah.
But you know, in politics, the Tigers actually do change their stripes. So he could get into politics and just become a complete asshole.
That's true.
Trumper. So
now the question is, the fear that people have is that Joe Manchin is going to mount a no labels third party challenge in the presidential race, which could fuck with Joe Biden a little bit. And again, I feel, and I understand why people don't want to give voters credit. I often don't want to give voters enough credit. I feel like you have to give voters some credit. I feel like you have to give them some credit. I feel like you have to, people will understand when we get to election day that, look, it's either Joe Biden or it's Donald Trump, and everything else in between doesn't really make a fuck.
Yeah, it's just noise. Joe Manchin jumping in, that doesn't put any fear in my heart. I think the people who like Joe Manchin are conservatives. Like, they still are. Maybe they're more conservative Democrats, but they also realize Joe Manchin cannot win. Like, they realize that.
Yeah. And again, my fear would be that it gives moderate Republicans who did vote for Joe Biden last time someone else to potentially vote for. Like that's my only fear in that regard. But again, like, he's not going to win states. Like, he's not even going to win his home state against Donald Trump.
No.
You know? Absolutely. So, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So fare thee well, Joe Manchin. You were never boring. I'll give you that much.
Yeah. I'll give you a bare minimum. All right, Brad. For some reason you seem to be writing this headline in a sarcastic way, and I don't understand why.
I am.
House passes a short-term funding bill without the Freedom Caucus again. Are you not cool with the Freedom Caucus? Is that your problem?
I'm not, in fact, cool with the Freedom Caucus. You could say that I am anti-Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe.
Yeah.
Republicans.
What is the old saying goes? Second verse, same as the first, as it were. Yeah. So the Freedom Caucus drummed out Kevin McCarthy because he dared negotiate with Democrats on a government funding bill, beclowned themselves in the House of Representatives for a number of weeks before they finally got their guy, MAGA Mike Johnson, in as Speaker of the House, known porn monitor as Speaker. And here we are again, where Mike Johnson has passed a temporary funding bill without the help of the Freedom Caucus and working with Democrats to make sure that the government does not shut down at the end of this week.
Look, I think it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think Republicans are completely inept. They have no idea how to do their job, which is quite simply getting laws through, getting budgets done, and it shows their level of incompetence, like fundamental incompetence. I know that the Democrats can't do what I would like them to do, which is to stand on the cliff of this shit and go, no, we're not going to help you. You fix it. You come up with a budget. But I know they're not going to do that because Democrats have a problem, which is easy to exploit. It's empathy trying to do their job, right? I know.
Well, and this
annoying, like, fucking Young Turks asshole fucking perspective is just let it fail and everyone will understand. No, because people will suffer. And you cannot operate like Republicans. You unfortunately have to negotiate in a way to try to help the most amount of people and not appear just like your opponent, like a bunch of assholes, right?
And this bill was specifically crafted to push the funding, to push the kick the can down the road, as it were, until next year, aka after the holidays, because they didn't want to run the risk of having a government shutdown, you know, during fucking Christmas, which would be not only really bad for those folks affected, but also just the worst look that you could possibly imagine.
Not a great idea. Not a great idea. Look, I just don't, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of these continuing CR or continuing resolutions. Mm-hmm. I want the budget done. Just be done. I don't like it being used as a fucking, as a weapon. Right? Good. Shut the government down. It's Christmas. It's Christmas. We're not going to do it. We'll see you in a couple months. Like, it's horseshit. It's horseshit. So, no, they should call it out. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's hilarious that the thing that McCarthy got tossed on is this guy's very first fucking, you know, time at the rodeo, right? Like, I just think that's funny. It just goes to show you how much Matt Gaetz hates Kevin McCarthy. Like, that's just his reason. That he's like, I gotta get this guy the fuck out.
Well, and it's even funnier because, like, the reason the Freedom Caucus hates it is because this bill that Johnson, you know, worked on basically keeps funding levels the same. And, of course, the Freedom Caucus wants massive cuts across the board. So,
yeah, it's a joke. I mean, the Republican Party is in and of itself a fucking joke. Just a complete and utter joke.
And by the way, I'm gonna read you a quote from Mike Johnson. And again, this is the difference between being a MAGA asshole and actually having, you know, your hands on the reins, and it kind of changes your tenor a little bit. Here's a quote from him. I want to cut spending right now, and I would like to put policy riders on this. But when you have a 3-vote majority, as we do right now, we don't have the votes to be able to advance that. What we need to do is avoid a government shutdown. Why? Because that would unduly harm the American people. Yep.
And again, when you get into power, you have to realize all of that bullshit, like rhetoric and all this other stuff, it doesn't matter. This is when the rubber meets the road, right? When you go, we're not going to do any of that. We're just going to let the government shut down. And then you're the guy responsible. And you're like, oh shit, like this will hurt real people. Like, they're fucking calling me and telling me I'm going to lose my job if you allow this to happen. And he goes, oh shit, okay, we gotta do something else. And it's like, you're a traitor. You don't give a shit about the Republican Party. No, dude, like, look, I'm not saying MAGA Mike is a good dude. He isn't. But you have to do something instead of just letting the government be destroyed over and over again. It's just not a good idea.
Also, to me, like that statement kind of undermines it gives away the game to some extent. It does. I'm pretty sure that if like you had somehow like Speaker Matt Gaetz wouldn't be like, fuck those kids. Like he'd be like, yeah, like we have to figure something
Matt
out.
Matt Gaetz might actually say those very words.
You think so? Yeah, you know what? You're right. Matt Gaetz absolutely positively lives by the motto, fuck those kids.
Yeah.
100%. So
across state lines, I hear. he would also bend to the will and try to be like, hey, we gotta do what's, you know, to keep the government open, right? Unless he's a massive nightmare and he thinks that, you know, taking down the federal government, you know, millions of people at a time is a good idea. You know, more on that later. There's a person who believes that. Hate that guy. Oh, hate shit. So yeah, no, it's nonsense. But it will be interesting to see if you maybe get a Freedom Caucus person who's like, motion to vacate. How about that, motherfucker? We're not doing this again.
Well, the terms from what they're hearing about, you know, Mike Johnson from the Freedom Caucus folks, they're giving him some leeway because he's still new. You know what I mean? Like he hasn't had a lot of time to get himself established or whatever. So we'll see. I mean, again, they're going to have to pick this shit back up in January. So we'll see. We'll see where we are when that happens. But yeah,
we'll do it again it'll be a bunch of continuing resolutions until Democrats get in power. That's it. And then Democrats will get a real budget because they can actually get aligned and have a real thought process. And everyone will go, oh, wow, that's interesting. And then we'll blow it off like it wasn't a big deal. And then we'll just get back into the same loop. That's what happens every fucking time. All right, let's take a quick break and come right back. Ironically. All right. GOP senator pretends to be a tough guy to a union boss. Come on, man. Who doesn't love this video? Who doesn't love this video? This is a real video, guys. This is a real video. What's this guy's name? McWayne?
No, Mark Wayne. His name is Mark Wayne. And by the way, that is not – it's not like Mark Wayne. His fucking full first name is Mark Wayne. Like one word, two names, one word together. It will not surprise you to learn this guy is from the deep south of Oklahoma.
I like, there's part of me that there's part of me that thinks maybe his name is pronounced like as like a black dude. Like it's like
Marquanye like, or something.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, it's like yeah, like McQuan. Yeah, like McQuain. Like it's like McQuain Mullen. McQuain Mullen. Like it can't be Mark Wayne. That's a stupid name. That's something a stupid person would name a child. But yeah, Mark Wayne's mom thought this was a great name. And look, she must have dropped him on his head because this guy is fucking big mad. So
now before you play the clip,
you got to cue this up. You know more about this.
Yeah, there is a backstory here. So the president of the Teamsters, whose name is Sean O'Brien, testified before Congress last year, and he got into a verbal spat with Mark Wayne Mullen, and that went viral as well and made the rounds for many, many weeks and months afterwards, basically calling Mark Wayne Mullen a piece of shit because Mark Wayne Mullen had a plumbing company before he got into Congress, and basically the Teamsters dude was just like, yeah, you probably treated your employees like shit too and underpaid them and exploited them and all this shit as well, because you're just a fucking business owner and now you're a Republican passing policy to make it easier for other business owners to treat their workers like shit. So I can just assume that you were the same way. And Mark Wayne Mullen, you'll be surprised to know, did not take kindly to that characterization from a fucking hard-hitting dude from Boston who gives no fucks talking shit to a sitting U.S. senator. So that's the background for this confrontation.
Right. So these guys have history. So yes. Here you go. Here's the clip of what happened today. That's amazing.
It's like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been, always will be. Quit the tough guy act in these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, anytime, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution, every Republican?
No, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Active.
Oh, okay.
Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond?
Mr. Hold it. If we can, no, I have the mic. Said. I'm sorry.
This is what he said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing.
And again, the icing on the cake is that fucking, of course, the dude chairing this Senate committee is fucking Bernie Sanders because of course it is.
No, you can't. I have the microphone. Knock it off.
You're a United States Senator. I can't believe you're acting this way.
Where's my cane to beat one of you half to death?
Oh my God.
Like it's hilarious to me. Oh, this is a time. This is a place with two consenting adults. You want to fucking rock and roll? Let's go.
You're real lucky this dance was in the way. Otherwise, we'd be rumbling.
You're lucky Bernie's holding me back. Like, nah, dude. I think you're lucky. Look, like we had talked about offline. If you say to a guy, You're crossing with a guy. You're at a bar or something like that. And you're like, hey, you want to do something right now? If that guy says, I would love to, that's not a guy you want to fight, dude. That guy looked like – he looked like what's the bald-headed like – was it Ball Bull or whatever from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out? Like he looked like that guy. Like, dude, you want to fight that guy? God. Like this guy is the president of the Teamsters. They kill people, man. Like, allegedly, right? Come on, man. This is like these are the hard pipe hitting motherfuckers of the union world. Okay, like the Teamsters get into fistfights. They beat up scabs. Like that's what they do. I'm not challenging that guy to a fight. Oh, you want to fight? I would love to. He said that to a senator. He said it to a senator, dude, on TV. I'd be like, you know what? You got it. Like, you got it, big dog. That's how you're going to respond?
Well, I'm good. And like I told you beforehand, like, it brings me so much joy that you know that Mark Wayne Mullen was so pissed off about that first altercation. Oh, yeah. Dude, he's probably been thinking about this moment for literally months, knowing that he'd get to see this dude.
shadow again, boxing in his fucking fancy apartment on K Street. Like, fuck, I'm gonna beat this guy.
So I have an update for you, Jay, on Mark Wayne Mullen, because he's been doing the rounds on Fox News tonight in the wake of this conversation. And he said that, you know, while he was the president, Andrew Jackson would routinely challenge people to duels.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's true. Maybe if we have, maybe if we bring duels back, we could people could actually pay consequences
what
for their actions.
Are you talking about? They kill people. They kill people in duels. You know? like, what are you talking about?
Look, have you seen Hamilton? Mark Wayne Mullen probably has not seen Hamilton.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. Then you're like, you go for chicken afterwards. Like, no, you know, people died. Like, that's like Andrew Jackson. I believe Andrew Jackson. I just saw this. How many duels did he have? It's like over 100, dude. Like, Andrew Jackson was such a piece of shit. He had up to 103 duels in his lifetime.
Ironically, Andrew Jackson apparently pretty good at duels. Yeah, he had 103 duels.
Dude, Andrew Jackson shot and killed 103 men. Like, that's insane. Knowing him.
Or probably at least shot and maimed or grievously wounded.
Yeah.
103 men. And again, like, everyone knows the story of Charles Sumner caning someone to within within an inch of their life on the House floor back in the 1800s during when tensions were high, when the abolitionist movement was starting. Look, I said in the Discord, like, if we're going to bring this back, can we at least modernize it? So, like, instead of having like a cane, like, we can bring out like kendo sticks, and they can start like wailing on each other.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, ECW level kendo stick fights. Like, that's fine. Holy shit. look, this runs right parallel to Kevin McCarthy apparently elbowing a fellow Republican in the back. Tim
according to Tim Burchett, he elbowed him in the kidneys, according to what he said.
Because Burchett voted against Kevin McCarthy?
Like, yes, Tim Burchett is one of the one of the elite eight in the House Freedom Caucus who ousted Kevin McCarthy. But yeah, so
look, I showed the clip to my wife, and I will remind people here as well. The video of John Lovett from Pod Save America reading out that story of Eric Swalwell and Kevin McCarthy almost coming to blows has got to be one of the funniest fucking things I've ever heard. I believe the line that Kevin McCarthy says is, like, because Swalwell called him a coward on the floor, and he got into Swalwell's face and he was like, if you call me a pussy again, I'll kick your ass, which Eric Swalwell responded with this tempo, you are a pussy, straight to his face, and Kevin McCarthy walked away, because Kevin McCarthy is a fucking coward. Which yes. Also tells me, man, I would have a lovely time as a congressman. Because I'd be a dick about it. I'd say whatever the fuck I wanted, and then they'd be like, I'll kick your ass. And I'd be like, no, you won't. No, you won't. I will fuck you up. Shut up. And they'd be like,
you'd have a fun time as a Republican congressman. Democrats don't fucking put up with this nonsense.
No, but Eric Swalwell fucking called him out. I would just say wild shit. I'd be like, Kevin McCarthy, you suck. Yeah, I said it. I'll see you in the hallways, bitch. See you in the hallways. I think it'd be more fun to be a Democrat and just talk shit on Republicans. I'd just say all kinds of wild shit that I believe.
See, what I would do is I would do like the whole fucking, fucking Kevin McCarthy's a piece of shit. And they'd be like, hey, that's against House decorum. I'll be like, you know what? You're right. The gentleman from California is a piece of shit.
Yeah. And they'd be like, well, that's fine. Like, you can't say that. Stupid rule. Like, dude, I'm right here. I just love that. Kevin McCarthy, like, give you a little elbow. I'd be like, that's cool. And I'd punch you in the mouth. like I don't understand that you elbow me in the back. I'd be like, dude, did you do that on purpose? And he'd be like, yeah, I did. And I'd be like, that's cool. And then I'd punch him in the mouth.
And by the way, like, McCarthy's response to this, like kind of backs up your point that he is actually like, and Eric Swallow is correct, he is a massive pussy. Yeah. Where he said, you know, if I were to hit somebody, they would know I hit him. Like, come on, fuck Kevin Garthy, get the fuck out of here.
Like, dude, you did it. Stand by that shit.
Yeah.
And now they're like,
he does absolutely. I'm no fan of Tim Burchett because Tim Burchett sucks ass too. But like, I am undoubtedly Kevin Garthy did that shit on the sly and fucking ran away.
What a coward, yo. What a coward.
Yes.
Like, if you call me a pussy one more time, you are a pussy. You ain't going to do shit. And he's right. He wasn't going to do shit. That's awesome. All right. Next up. This is sad news, everybody. Just as we finally met the very, very busy senator from the great state of South Carolina, Tim Scott, after we finally met his girlfriend, a woman who immediately stood by his side right after the actor strike was over. Curious.
odd timing, right?
Odd timing for her. He's dropping out of the race. He isn't making much traction. No shit. I don't know why he would. But good on him. So, I mean, how sad are you? He was your pick, I know.
Yes, I'm so very sad. You know what's fucked up, by the way? So he announced this to the country on Trey Gowdy's Fox News show, because apparently they're bros, both being from South Carolina.
Oh my god.
Yes, Trey Gowdy has a fucking Sunday night Fox News show. Yes, Trey Gowdy's haircut still horrendous. He still definitely cuts his own hair. Which is a terrible idea for him.
With the lights off, back.
Yeah. you're not supposed to use the Manscaped on your head, Trey Gowdy. Jesus Christ. Like, but apparently, not only did Tim Scott announce that to the country on Trey Gowdy's show, apparently that's the first time he told anybody about it, because apparently his campaign staff and donors did not know that that was happening until they heard the news from the Trey Gowdy thing. Which is really fucked up.
Yeah, it's not cool. At the same time, like, who gives a shit? I'm being honest. Who gives a shit? The guy's.
It's just a slap in the face from people that fucking worked hard for you, like, and tried their best to get you where you needed to get to. For them not to know first, you know what I mean?
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's
like apparently his campaign sent out an email to donors asking them for more money 13 minutes before the announcement happened.
Wow. He was like, so, I'm out of here. Like, that's really fucking crazy.
Yes.
All right, sad news. The big dog is out of here. All right, let me tell you what's not not sad.
We had a fucking time this morning, the three of us, me, you, and Andy, talking about this shit. Holy fuck.
Who are the people voting for Vivek? Or Vivek Ramaswamy? Who are you?
One's voted for him yet. Like these are just polls.
Supporters? Who are your fucking supporters? Are they completely stupid? Because he is. He's stupid. I'll prove it to you. This is what he tweeted on day one, instantly, and I love how you put it in quotes, like you didn't need to include it, right? Because
we know that you can't snap your fingers and make this thing that you're proposing happen.
Include instantly. On day one, instantly, fire 50% of federal bureaucrats. Here's how. Okay, well.
Yeah, you know, Jay, how are you going to determine who to fire and who not to fire?
Well, Brad, I'm glad you asked. Here's a super, super, very serious way of handling firing.
Yeah, very scientific method.
Right. Firing 50% of federal bureaucrats. By the way, when he says bureaucrats, he just means 50% of federal employees, right? They're all bureaucrats to him. They're all bureaucrats. So 50% of federal employees. By the way, just so we know, for as I read this, there are 2 million federal employees across the United States. So he is talking about firing approximately 1 million people. instantly on day one. Here's how he would do it. If your social security number ends in an odd number, you're fired. That downsizes the government by half. Absolutely nothing will break as a result. It doesn't violate civil service rules because mass layoffs are exempt. Shut it down. All capital letters. Okay, Brad, you had a mathematical reason why this is stupid, which I appreciated. Go for that.
Yeah. So let's say we meet Vivek where he is, as the term goes. So let's be in his plan. He wants to cut 50% of the staff. He thinks that it's possible that exactly half of federal employees have an odd social security number and exactly half of federal employees have an even social security number. Now, the laws of probability put it probably around 50%, like just in with a large sample size, like you're going to see it around 50%, but it's not going to be exactly 50%. Like it might be like 53% or 54% have odd numbers, or maybe it's have even numbers. So really you're only firing like 46% of the federal government. The other point is this also doesn't work agency to agency. So like you might cut like fucking 60% of the employees at like the IRS and maybe only cut like, you know, 43% of the employees at the FBI. Like it would affect different agencies completely randomly. Also, and I didn't talk about this earlier, like what if it just so happens that like all of the leadership positions that aren't politically appointed, that are hired and promoted, all happen to have odd social security numbers. So like, hey, like a lot of the low level people, like we kept them, but like all their bosses are gone. they're all out here.
Or worse.
The opposite
happens, right? And it's just like a bunch of actual bureaucrats and then nobody to do the actual work.
Right.
Look,
I like how he's like nothing will break. I do feel like ripping a Band-Aid off your arm, like taking half of the federal workforce out of circulation might have an impact on how the country's run and might break some things, because again, the amount of work they're handling wouldn't change. There would just literally be half as many people to do the same amount of work, meaning that everybody would be doing twice as much work that was left over.
Right. And, you know, more or less, depending on the percentage of
people
in your particular department, right? Because all of a sudden, like you said, the three of us were talking about that. Like, what if there's a massive amount of people at Veteran Affairs who get laid off just because of this stupid idea, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. He's not a serious person. He is a deeply unserious person. And I've long said this. And, you know, people, oh, no, you just don't get Vivek. I apologize. Like, you just don't get him. No, you don't get it. The things he's saying are simplistic, dumb bullshit, and it only appeals to people who don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. Like, firing a million people, let alone the damage that does from a, like, intellectual, like, brain suck out of the federal government. What happens to adding a million people to unemployment all of a sudden, or a million people to the ability that they cannot buy food? What happens, right? We need to work on unemployment. We need to give people homes and stuff like that. What happens to the single people, not even people in marriages, let's say, because I'm going to talk about that in a second. What are you talking about? All the federal employees who are single people, then suddenly they cannot pay their rent. They cannot pay their mortgage. They cannot eat. So you're just putting people out on the street, right?
What happens to
their homes, default on their mortgages, their other bills, their car notes and stuff like that. All of that happens. Let alone, what if they're the single breadwinner in a home? Then you're
What happens to our relations with other countries when you just fire half of the rank and file folks in the State Department?
Right.
Like how do diplomats, how do ambassadors, how do those folks fucking function without people doing the work, like without staff to do the work for them?
What happens if the ambassador gets fucking gone? Like,
well, that's an appointed position. I don't think that would fall under his cuts.
Maybe.
But again, like, it's not like the ambassador is one person working by themselves. Like, they have a staff of people. that work for them as well, that help prepare them for meetings and, you know, the goings ons and, you know, the region that they're in and that kind of shit. Kind of important.
Look, I got to tell you, I found the whole conversation in our Discord about this to be hilarious. Someone was like, as a federal employee with an odd number, I do not appreciate this idea at all. Someone said, as a federal employee with an even number, this is working out great.
But is it because, again, like, and I know that I think it was Anthony said that was joking, but it's like, no, it won't, because you're going to be stuck. Like, half people are going to get fired, and that's bad for them. And the people that are left are all of a sudden going to have their work plus the work of someone else that got fired. And it's going to be pretty bad for, pretty fucking miserable for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't, yeah. I'm sorry. Anthony's actual quote was, as a bureaucrat with an even, number, social security number, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and stop mooching. Even lives matter. That's really good. Like, it's so deeply unserious. Nobody who's actually running for president in a legitimate way thinks that this makes sense.
Well, and he specifically, I feel like he's getting desperate because he had the most talked about moment of the debate that happened last week. Where he, like, you know, Nikki Haley was talking about TikTok and how you know he uses TikTok even though he like bitches and moans about like, oh, the influence of the Chinese government, and his response was basically you get your own house in order first because your daughter is on TikTok, to which she replied, get my daughter's name out of your voice, which is kind of a mismatch of two turns of phrase there, right. so gotta get that shit right. But that did not make him look good. Like, it made him look very Trumpian, which is why I think that he's now fully auditioning for Trump's VP. Cause I know he doesn't think he has a snowball chance in hell of actually winning the nomination.
He does not.
But yeah, but that's where this kind of like dumb fucking Neanderthal thinking comes from. It's just like, oh, like just cut half the staff. Like, that'll be fine. Again, these people can't think.
Applebee's, you know, like,
yeah,
like, and even an Applebee's,
a fucking Applebee's would be in fucking dire straits, like, if you just got half the staff of an Applebee's.
And Susan aren't coming in today. There's only six of us, my dude. Like, what the fuck are we doing? Yeah, like, you cannot trust these people near the reins of power, man. You simply cannot. You just can't. Yeah, he called Vivek called Nikki Haley Dick Cheney in 3-inch heels. That did not go over well. People were like, ooh,
no, I don't
like
that. It really didn't.
That's not cool. Look, man, don't go after people's kids. Like, that shit's not cool. Like, don't go after, I don't care. Like, it should be beneath you. Like, you don't go after people's kids. Like, and I mean, like,
especially kids, they're like, not
actual,
involved.
Right. Like, actual kids. I don't mean like Jared Kushner and Ivanka. Like, I don't mean that type of shit. I mean, like, they're actual, like, legitimately, like, oh, that's that person's a teenager or younger type of kid. Like, it's not cool. It looks really shitty. So,
yeah. Well, Vivek Ramaswamy is really shitty. So that, you know, that tracks.
Well, way to bring back This Week in Stupid, Vivek. You are the worst. Like, I'm telling you.
I mean, again, as long as he's in the race, like, I feel like he's got the Herschel Walker position on lockdown at this point. So
yeah. Look, and every time I hear from Vivek, what I realize is I know more about politics than he does. Right? What was that clip? He was on. He got interviewed on the Young Turks, and he's like, "We need a secular society," and they're like, "We already live in a secular society." He's like, "No, we live in a society. We need to have a society where anybody can be any religion they want, and like." But they can't bother other people, and we don't make a religion. You know, the state, you know, the country doesn't have a formal religion. And Cenk Uygur was like, "Well, you're lucky to hear that, because that's what the United States is. That's why it's the first secular constitution." And he's like, "Well, you use whatever words you want to use." No, dude, it's not use whatever words you want to use.
I think Cenk literally asked him, he's like, you know, like what would be your enforcement mechanism for that? And Viva was like, the Constitution. And Cenk's like, well, I've got good news for you. Yeah, it's already in there. So. Yeah,
what the fuck are you talking about?
Like, yeah, you dummy. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, good. Good, 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 good grief. Please stop talking. I can't believe they let another fucking dude bro from the internet run for president. Like, what a waste of time. Like, you don't
again,
know,
I,
he doesn't
I,
know shit. He doesn't know shit. Yeah.
I'll never understand. And again, we talk about Elon Musk all the time. I talked about Ryan Cohen last week on Dense Pixels, who's cut from the same fucking cloth. Stop trusting these fucking finance guys to be smart. They're all fucking idiots. They're all fucking idiots who got fortunate.
Yeah, that's it. And it's just pointless. They are never going to lead you down a path that doesn't involve them just making a bunch of money, gaining a bunch of popularity, and then just kicking you in the teeth over and over again.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit about you. They come from finance, okay? Like, the most ruthless aspect of our society. How do I hoard more and more money? Like, these people.
Remember when people like didn't trust Mitt Romney because he used to work for Bain Capital?
Yeah, that was funny.
That was only 11 years ago, guys. Yeah. like finance guy, like, oh, like get him out of here. Like, we don't want him anywhere fucking near this shit.
Now it's like, oh, Vivek started a pharmaceutical company and, you know, did a bunch of bullshit trials and got some terrible drug on the market, and then it got booted off because it wasn't very good. Yeah, he's our guy. Like,
yeah. No. Hey, we really should elect someone who's going to run the country like a business. You really had that work out the last time.
Yeah. These guys keep fucking their businesses up, and you keep choosing them. Pick a guy who's actually good at business, I guess. So, yeah, it's a bit weird. It's a bit weird, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yep. Just,
come on, man. Be better. Be better. Right. Like, I believe Dum Dum said that.
Be best. Be best. Is what she said. Yeah.
Right. Be best. They really do marry just the dumbest people they can find.
I like how she's been fucking invisible.
Gonzo. She can't wait to get out of there. Like,
yeah.
She's waiting for that guy to die so bad. Like, she's like, any day now? Like, another hamburger? Yeah.
Okay. I like how you think that she's ever in the same room as he is. Jesus Christ, get out of here.
Yeah. You know what? That's very true. Like, that's not likely. Well, yikes. All right. That is it for us. We will see you guys next week with another episode of Look Forward.
See you.